Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 11th, 2024. I have your host, James, here, and we're joined right now by our good friend, Matt Lippert, Wood County Agricultural Agent. Matt, good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Appreciate the time. How have you been?
Pretty well.
Good. Good to hear. Matt, we're going to get into a couple of things today. Bird flu in dairy cattle, the unusual weather patterns that farmers have been experiencing. I want to touch on both of those. To start with the bird flu, just and we've talked about this a little bit on Melissa's show, The Kitchen's Open, and the morning show a little, but to catch everybody up in case you didn't hear, in an effort to prevent the spread of highly pathological avian influenza in dairy cattle, the Wisconsin Department of Agricultural, Trade, and Consumer Protection is requiring influenza A testing prior to movement of lactating dairy cattle to fairs or exhibitions, and this was effective last month. Matt, what did I just say? No, I'm kidding, but I have a professional here with me and somebody who's actually in the industry, so I'm just speaking what I'm reading. What are the in between the lines there, what does that mean?
Okay, so there's, I don't know what the current number is, a dozen states that have, it's HPAI, that have had cows known to be positive with HPAI. It started in the spring in the panhandle of Texas, and HPAI, highly pathogenic, has been around for a few years. It's very decimating to poultry units, turkeys, layers, and chickens, and so forth. So we didn't know how it'd be in cattle. It's mutated enough, changed enough that it's infecting these dairy cattle. So what we do know now since it started is currently it's still mutating. It's got a virus. There's many opportunities to change. Currently, it's hard on a dairy herd. It's not as hard as it is on the poultry. It's very sudden. Some of these really large herds in Texas have a bolus inside of the cow's rumen, so they can monitor what the cow does, and she shuts down just like immediately. It's just really abrupt. And there are deaths, but not many. Mainly these cows shut down, and over 3 weeks they get better. Quite a few of them get back to where they were. A lot of them maybe not quite. And so some of them might be culled because of that. And since then, since the New Mexico, which is right next to the panhandle of Texas, it's moved into the Midwest, and we think they initially got it from migratory birds, and some of these others also. And so the migration is, it's July, there's not much migration happening right now, but already in August, they start coming back the other way. So we may have infected migratory birds coming over the U.S. this fall. Our biggest dairy show is the World Dairy Expo is the first week of October. So that may play out differently. But what's interesting is here we are, the second largest dairy state, and no diagnosed herds in Wisconsin at this point. But there are in Minnesota, Iowa, and Michigan. So all around us, South Dakota, Wyoming, Kansas. So it's around, it's increasing. We also know that not only can it take the jump from birds to cattle, it can go from cattle to humans. And it can go from, in Michigan, there's an area in that state where there's a lot of chicken and turkey operations nearby dairy operations. And probably the workers, maybe a household, maybe have a house and one person works the dairy farm and another person works at the poultry unit, or the same person does both, or the same person is in a service industry that goes to both, or whatever. So it has gone from dairy back to poultry, and there we know that it really knocks the birds out. So that is why we have, even though we don't have any of it in Wisconsin, we're anticipating we probably will at some point. Mm-hmm. And some of these larger shows, cattle come from all across the U.S. And so that's why they're requiring testing. They're only so what the farmers find interesting about it is you don't have to, if you have a heifer, a young cow, not milking yet, which a lot of those are what 4-H kids show at mm-hmm. FFA youth show at fares. They don't have to be tested.
Hmm.
It's the cows. And if you take a beef cow, so same species, they don't have to be tested because it's been found only in dairy cattle, even though it hasn't been found in Wisconsin. So it's a little precautious, but and there's some logistics at a fair. The state is interested in monitoring this, so they're subsidizing the cost, but you still have to have a veterinarian take it, so you'll probably have some expense, and you have some timeliness issues from the when you take the test to when you exhibit the animal. You have a week. So and they only test 3 days a week, so there's some logistics as far as actually getting a test. So it's affected. Some counties have said we will not exhibit any dairy cattle, just don't want to deal with it. I'd say so far it's more common that counties have to figure out how to, they have to do another step. They have to be able to check some veterinary papers when these animals come in.
I know, not to put you in the room, I know you weren't, and not to put you, ask you to think what other people were thinking, but what do you think the decision on that was as far as not just doing cattle in general, but it being specifically with, you know, it seems like that it would, especially from hearing you talk about it, this seems like it would have been a better idea to just cover the bases here and all cattle need to be tested.
Well, so far in the country, there is not a single beef cow that's been shown to have it. So it may be that beef cattle are not dealt with every daily as intimately as a dairy cow. So they're harder to deal with, you know. So beef cattle get vaccinated, maybe dewormed. It's a big ordeal because these are a little closer to wild animals.
Yeah.
And so it's a big event. And that may also be why it hasn't been detected in beef cattle. But we have not had any evidence of herds being severely impacted by beef cattle, and it'd be much harder to do. So I'd say that's why they've said, no, it's just dairy cows. So,
Given your position at UW and you being a farmer, what is the feedback you have heard from the community about this?
Well, I think farmers understand the importance of epidemics and not minimalizing the consequences. So I think we're very fortunate right now in Wisconsin that we haven't had it. We're very fortunate right now that even though it's impactful and farmers are going to lose a lot of milk, they may lose a few animals, it's not, typically doesn't result in death. So it's not as bad as it could be. But again, as I said, it's a virus. It's been mutating. This is the first time it's shown up in cattle. Now we've seen some in humans. It's typically been pink eye and it's been mild. But it's something that I think we understand the need that this can evolve and change, and we want to be on top of it.
Yeah, especially what we've been through in the last 5-10 years.
Right, the pandemic, mm-hmm. not the epidemic.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah we, so, yeah.
When it comes to, and again, I feel like I do this to you way too often, man, when it comes to these questions that I don't know how you answer, but you always do. You mentioned that Wisconsin hasn't been affected where our surrounding states have. Do you think there's any rhyme or reason to that? Or
a little bit. So so the initial infection and maybe some of the later ones have nearly certainly been caused by wild animals, birds, migrating. But the transmission from Texas, New Mexico to Michigan is very clearly identified with cows physically being moved from Texas and New Mexico to Michigan. Well, we are in the Wisconsin kind of by quite an extent an exporter of cows. So not that cows don't come in from other states, but I think that's been in our favor, is that we send more cows out than come in. So that would be my theory as to why we've been so fortunate so far.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Is there any other facts or details you think would be good for the audience to know about this?
Be vigilant. It's interesting. Cats, on farm cats, typically drink milk. That's, you know, a farmer has some waste milk or something, and they put it out for the kitties. And actually, that is We know it's kind of a unique thing. When a virus is in a body, it can concentrate in certain tissues. And this virus, we don't know why, shows up in the milk. And we think that's pretty concentrated. And the cows get abnormal milk. So if you have cows that suddenly shut down, kind of, just really lethargic, not eating, and they suddenly aren't milking, and you got several of them, and their milk is thick, not normal milk, maybe you should talk to your vet, and maybe we'll have our first case. Hmm. But if you, another canary in the coal mine thing would be cats die, farm cats die.
Hmm.
Or if you start having birds around, wild birds, unusual amounts dying,
hmm.
Those are some indicators.
And if something like that happens, is there someone that you contact right away? Is there somebody?
We have to be careful in extension because we aren't a regulator. So I don't want
right.
to give too many personal insights and it turns out to be misinformation or not official doctrine. So it's DATCAP, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, who made the ruling about this testing that needs mm-hmm. to be done. And if we get further into epidemic and they change the rules, it'll be them. Mm-hmm. And if you have incidents, you could consult your veterinarian. Nearly every farmer works routinely with a veterinarian. And they will talk to DATCAP, or you would you could do that directly.
Excellent. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. Very good information. We're speaking with Matt Lippert, agricultural agent with UW-Madison Division of Extension. Matt, I you don't have to spend much time in Wisconsin or the Midwest to understand that the weather is going to change in the time we are talking.
We hope it changes.
Yeah.
We need some change.
Right. We've had some really unusual weather, and it's been affecting our farmers and our ag industry. But how has it been affecting?
One measure of this is the Marshfield Ag Research Station is a weather reporting station since I think its inception. So they've got records back to 1913, and you can evolve the greatest 1 hour event, the greatest 1 day event, but the period April, May, June, which is what we kind of call spring. It was the fourth wettest since 1913.
Wow.
So not a record, except for those of us that have been experiencing this. April wasn't that unusual. April was actually, last year was extremely dry, and people were still concerned about that pattern. Hmm. So it really happened in May and June that we got all this rain, and they noticed it a little less in right here in Rapids, or Portage County on the sand, but we have a county here in Wood County between here and Marshfield that doesn't do well when we get a lot of rain.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of makes it marginal farm ground, and so that's what happened this year. Is we have a lot of spring planting. Majority of that should happen in May because we have wetter soil around here. We're familiar with going into the beginning of June, but we have in Wood County, and it's not just here, but we probably are one of the more severe examples, but all across the state of Wisconsin, there's a weekly report that comes out about what percent of the soil is extremely droughty, normal, wet, extremely wet. And we have, in the entire state, we have none of the two driest categories, no soil, and that's very unusual. But here in Wood County, if you drive, you will see, well, I guess if you're not a farmer, maybe you won't notice as much, but we have a lot of fields that didn't get planted and will not get planted because it's too late to make, you can't go out today and plant corn and it turn into a corn grain crop. You could still plant corn and chop it up for silage, but it won't be ideal for that either because it just won't get to the maturity it needs to get to by the time frost shuts it down. Same thing with soybeans. The other one we got is we make a lot of hay in the county here, and you don't want to get stuck with your farm equipment. Have you ever heard the phrase, make hay when the sun shines?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so hay has to get dry. You have to put it out, you rely on the sun to dry it down, and then you harvest the hay. Well, The other unique thing about this this pattern of all this rain is it's been, you know, you could have the same amount of rain and have the week of the first week of June not rain and still have the same April, May, June period. And we would have had tremendously more acres in. But it's been just incredibly consistent down to, like, I heard some say, well, it's 18, once every 18 hours, not a day and a half. So,
yeah, yeah.
So not more than 18. So it's been very consistent. And so that means that even if we had less rain than this, there'd be no variability in the soil moisture. It would just be consistently wet. And so, yeah, we have unplanted crops. We have unmade hay. Hay gets, now you can make it. Well, hay gets to be mature. There's a right time to make hay for it to be most beneficial feed for cattle. We're past that time. It's too mature. It becomes more like straw. So we lost a lot of hay quality. We have a lot of unplanted crops. If you go out and see some farmers snuck some corn in and you see that the population, a lot of the corn didn't germinate or gave up at some point. So you have low populations, empty spots in fields. You have yellow corn that rain leaches the soil of its nitrogen. A lot of bad effects of this excessive rain. So.
And it seems it has certainly disrupted a farmer's routine. It also sounds like it could be affecting consumers.
Well, yeah. I mean, so far across the U.S., we are still predicting it's kind of a Wisconsin-Minnesota thing. Mm. So we're still expecting a pretty good corn crop in the U.S. Some areas benefit from more rain. Some areas that were droughty last year are back to normal. The Mississippi River couldn't float barges in the southern Mississippi, and we've solved that problem. Actually, we have Mississippi around northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin is an extreme flood stage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not in the south because the other tributaries are not contributing as much. So far, I don't think you're going to have to worry too bad about what happens in the grocery store. And farmers are going to rely on things like hopefully they have crop insurance, that they're insured against a disaster mm-hmm. like this. But a lot of farmers are knowing that it's going to be even with insurance, which they should have, that just physically, how are they going to feed the cows?
Yeah.
And so I've been giving a lot of advice to people on alternative crops that are not as good as our corn or soybeans that they could plant that will come out of the ground quickly, respond to a lot of crops that we plant in May, like the cooler spring, so we don't have anymore. We have July. So are there crops that really like hot July weather and can respond in 6 weeks and make some feed to make up some of the difference and some quality? So we've been giving information on what to do with what you've been dealt.
Is that the main kind of question you've been receiving at UW?
I would say it is. It's like, the indemnity that a farmer might get for prevented planting of corn is substantial. So there's a lot of rules to say, well, you ever had this joke, the government paid me not to farm?
Yeah.
Because they did that. And there is a time in history when we had surplus and the government solution was pay you not to farm. Well, crop insurance seems a little bit like that way is they're going to pay you for not getting your corn crop in. Mm. And across the fence, somebody did. Well, really, nobody did very well by it. So it's very obvious it was a very difficult year. But there is a little pattern that here's an okay cornfield, and right next door is an unplanted field. So they have pretty strict rules on crop insurance that if you're going to get this significant check for failing to get your corn planted, that you don't, after the deadline, go in and plant corn.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be one of the suggestions we'd make, is it's still going to give you a lot of tonnage of feed, even though it's not grain.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for crop insurance, the current rule is that because they're policing that, that you're going to have to find a different crop to plant. Mm.
When it comes to that, piggybacking on what you say there, I don't know if there's many people that are more adaptive than farmers and people in the ag industry. How have they been adapting to this?
So we have a heavy livestock industry in this area, so farmers are still going to try to plant something to feed their cattle. But if you get in this area, you get some farmers that are not dairy farmers. They're just they're called row crop farmers. They grow corn and soybeans. A lot of those people, this would happen in other areas too, just won't plant. So I'd say there is an example of adaptive is that we need to feed livestock. And so rather than say, well, we missed the window, it's a loss because usually the insurance won't be as good as if you could grow a good crop. But people that are feeding livestock are really struggling to figure out how to keep their cattle fed.
Matt, I can't thank you enough for the conversation and the time. Always a good time. I always enjoy talking with you. I learn when I talk with you, too, and I know our audience does. We appreciate that. If people have follow-up questions, if they'd like to get a hold of you in some way or another, how can they do that?
Well, the Extension office is here at the courthouse, right in the ground floor. You can mail us. You can go to our website, which if you just Google or do your search engine and do Wood County Extension will show up. You can call us.
Yeah.
You can email us. All that's on our website.
Morse code. You can, no.
There's lots of ways.
There's a lot of different
and
ways.
And then we're out in the public, so you can find us somewhere sometimes too.
Stop by the building or that. You can go to extension.wisc.edu, extension.wisc.edu. It's another great way to get a hold of Matt or anybody of the great people that join us on this show from Extension. Take care, Matt. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you coming up here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.